All right, hello, good afternoon, good evening, and good morning to everybody. This is Four Guys,
One Film.
And today we're reviewing the movie Heat, the fantastic fucking movie. Primarily the only reason I wanted to watch this movie with you guys was for the greatest action scene that we've ever seen up until, I would say, the early 21st century.
Early 21st century.
So the 20th century, I think this is a fantastic fucking scene.
Of the 20th century.
Of the 20th century.
So it takes the cake for all of the beginning of filmmaking.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, yeah, think about it. It's 100 years. You know, they figured shit out.
That's true.
For an action sequence, I think they did it really well.
Really, George?
George, do you not understand the timelines we're talking about?
The greatest action sequence of the 21st century before then? Anything before that?
Fuck.
Jesus fucking Christ. I can see you don't have a degree.
Jesus. Shit. Can't keep that in. Nope.
I'm agreeing with you. What the fuck do you want?
We're talking
here?
About the 20th century. That's everything below the year 2000.
Yeah, that's. Oh wait, okay, never mind. You said 21st, but you said
yeah, but then
anything
I'm like,
before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Don't cut this.
The viewer retention is just gone. It didn't exist to begin with.
Isaac, I think you're right. This might be the greatest action scene of the 20th century. I can't think of another film where it's just boom, you think of this.
Well, we compared it to Live and Die in L.A. That sequence where they were
driving
that
scene.
Was chase.
The car chase.
I think it's different from like a car chase to a driving scene. And,
No, I'm not saying it's better, but I'm saying it's up there. It's really good.
It's on par.
Yeah,
pretty well.
Well, I think one of the reasons I also really appreciate this action is because it's one of the most accurate like shootouts that you would see. Like if this is like you
bullshit, they got away.
No.
They wouldn't have got away. I don't think
we're not
like,
talking about getting away.
You're talking about the
real,
sound design.
Realism?
Yeah, like I'm talking about like the realism in terms of just like, okay, they're shooting at each other. They're not like people are getting like caught left and right.
I don't think a single civilian died. Did you see any civilians die?
I saw a couple of them died.
A couple of them died. Yeah, like this is like I feel like it'd be realistic if you're gonna have like a shootout in downtown LA. I feel like that's what it would look like.
Yeah, well, that's what it would sound like too. Because they didn't put in like you know mock you know gun sounds like they I think they actually recorded.
Yeah, no, this is actual recording.
They one thing I noticed too is like the fucking bullets that would come off the vehicles, like they would actually explode. So it's like, how the fuck did they even film that? Were they using actual bullets? What were they doing? Were they using explosives? Like
I think if they used actual bullets, it would actually be deaths.
No, I mean for the sequences where the cars are getting like shot at and they're making a hole in it. Is it like, do you guys know how they filmed it?
I've always wondered how they do that too, because that's kind of like, I don't know if it's like a like an editing thing or if they have like
it could
a,
be like a possibly like a, just like a metal
or like a little explosive in there.
I think it's probably little explosives that would make the most sense. But I mean, gun safety back then, let's
right,
be honest,
I mean,
it wasn't the best.
We're talking about 1995.
What's that one guy that died in The Crow?
Brandon Lee.
Yeah, hey, he died.
He did die. It was very unfortunate.
Jesus Christ.
And now recently.
And Rush, dude. Recently.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Nick. I beat you to it.
Rush.
Well, I was going to. I finally came back to best action scenes of all time. And I was thinking, I was like, what would actually top it for that 20th century?
Because you got the Terminator movies.
See, no, but you guys are thinking about it all wrong. Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights.
There was some action. Those are some scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, if George saw the movie.
Some of those shots were on location.
Still haven't seen
if
it.
If George saw
saying.
The movie, he'd
guilty.
Know what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Different type of action. We got to clarify. Yeah.
Yeah. Very different type of action. Yes. And go back to that episode.
I mean, would you consider, like, a war movie something that is still considered under action, or is that a different genre
entirely?
I would consider it,
but, like, you don't see, like, it. It, like up until
Platoon as a whole is good, you know, but there's no particular scene that is BDS.
Yeah, you're right. I think you can't really pinpoint a specific.
All right. I would also, I think, in my opinion, this is also one of the greatest casts that was assembled of all time.
It's a good cast. I think anytime you have Pacino and De Niro together, as you got
and especially when they're playing off of each other, they have a big cat and mouse game like the whole entire movie. Which
yeah, but like, I wouldn't say it's the best cast other than them two. Like I really like their dynamic.
Well, Val Kilmer's good.
They're
too.
Literally the same fucking person. But other than Val Kilmer, the other people I could do without. Like you guys said, they were like knockoffs of other famous people that we.
They're knockoffs of famous people that we know today.
Yeah, but it's they actually delivered. I mean, we even talked about Danny Trejo in this movie. He really did like outperform most of his more recent or at least any of the movies I've seen him in.
Well, like, realistically, Danny Trejo is most of a cheese character, like in most of the movies he's ever played.
Yeah, well, that's why it was a breath of fresh air to see him be so serious in this one. Like, he didn't make jokes. He, you know, he seemed passionate when he
was. It's not like his character in Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Or no. Machete.
Yeah.
Totally different Bad. Guy.
Tortuga.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. He was in Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know,
it's because there's a bunch of other show. Latin drug dealers in that one, so it's hard.
Tuco?
It's really hard. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think the cast like really. You know, had got good chemistry. Right. Maybe I can get on that, but I don't know if I agree that it's the best cast of all time.
What would be the best?
Well, look, I guess you know what? Maybe Isaac is right. Maybe it is the best cast of all time because you got De Niro, you got Pacino, you got Trejo, you have the Allstate guy, Val Kilmer.
And everybody was in good hands, you could tell, until the end.
Exactly. I think if it wasn't for the Allstate guy, then
except
maybe.
For that chef that just got fucking murdered for no reason, should have stayed at his job, dude.
Jesus fucking Christ, George.
If only he knew what we were talking about.
George has never had insurance. So he doesn't know what Allstate is. Know.
Oh, wait, that's the Allstate guy?
Shame on dude. Us.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Shame on us. Okay? We're Nepo babies.
We made that joke as the movie was happening.
Dude, I've never seen an Allstate commercial with that fucking guy in it. Yes. So
it goes back to Nick's comment. You never had insurance.
Yeah, that's true.
This is true.
You never shop for insurance.
They're canceling it. You know, I just had my house turn on fire. They canceled it right before. It was crazy.
He said free Luigi. That's what he said. Free Luigi. You know? And Mario too while we're at it. Fuck it. But no, I mean, I don't know. I was thinking like, there are other movies though. Like when you think about Goodfellas, when you think about even like Casino, you know, I think that's the thing. You get Robert De Niro in with any of those old school gangster types, and it's just a phenomenal casting.
No, for sure. But I feel like this is kind of the reason I also like this as a cast because it's different from what they typically do. This is like there's action. They're not their typical Italian roles that we know.
Yes,
like they're individuals that are doing bad things or good things for whatever reason it may be, and we see that play out as the movie goes on.
Dude, that's crazy. Keanu Reeves could have been in this fucking movie. And he turned it down for a fucking stage play.
Wow.
That's some shit that Keanu would do, but I think this movie wouldn't do Keanu well.
Like, I think it would. Dude, if you put like his character from Speed in this setting,
but he was never going to be the main character.
Yeah.
Nah, but still though, I think his presence would have elevated for sure.
Going back to what you said, but beyond the whole aspect too of like these guys no longer being mobsters in this movie, or like considering they almost always are mobsters, I also did like seeing Pacino play the good guy because he's so often not, you know.
Yeah, he's really not.
And De Niro play the bad guy, and like now I feel like De Niro has been more typecast into like a father or like an older gentleman kind of role. He's got the interview with like Anne Hathaway. He's Meet the Fockers, you know. He's
or
like,
The Irishman
where
Bronx Tale, he was the
director for that.
Yeah, for Bronx Tale, he was just the dad. Like I feel like, you know, there's a, like when you really think about it, there's a generation of people who never really got to see De Niro play a bad guy or De Niro be like hard in any way and have this kind of motto.
Well, Raging Bull, he was kind of.
Oh yeah, he was terrible. Yeah. Absolutely,
he was a bad person.
I don't know he if wasn't he's necessarily. Yeah, he guy. Was more of a, you know.
He was a complicated character.
Yes,
I don't know, but it just to me, like going back to my point and why I think this is the greatest guy, because again, they do so well playing off of each other. There's like a chemistry, and we're gonna talk about this later. But like the length of the movie, I didn't even feel like it, because again, the chemistry was there, the action was there, the pacing was fantastic. Like the 3 hours,
it could have been 2 hours.
Well, going back to the cast, I kind of disagree with you because I think as much as there are, you know, actors that we know and that we love, it's not really an ensemble. Okay. I think it's really between Pacino and De Niro.
I think you could argue it's one of the best duos.
I can agree with that.
I can really see that argument.
Because like Boogie Nights, I feel like is an ensemble. You have all these characters interacting with each other and you kind of get a piece of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like I hate to, you know, we used to always talk about these movies, but you also have like the Avengers movies where all of these guys are insane actors nowadays.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you're getting actors from all over, like Sam Jackson wanting to play things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like those movies are obviously like ensemble cast too.
Yeah, because there you have space for everybody.
Yeah, but Samuel Jackson will literally do anything.
He will do anything.
Yeah. He said, he's like, I got to pay
bills. Snakes on a plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could also go back to what Alexis was saying off air.
Thank you.
Ocean's 11, you know.
The
great
Ocean's
cast.
Movie, yeah.
That was fantastic.
I'm not downplaying the movie. Too. I feel like, I don't know. It just isn't like, that's not a serious movie, right? And none of those characters are playing a serious role. It's kind of like a more casual thing in the Ocean's movies. It's really not much at stake.
It's fun.
It's a fun movie to watch. And I'm not trying to downplay it and say like, because I love those movies.
Yeah. But Andre and I, we did a fucking 3-movie marathon last year. Incredible.
Yeah, honestly.
It was like 12 hours. Did you guys watch?
It was like, how much? Like 6 to 7 to 8 hours maybe of just pure Oceans.
That's good. You guys even watch the newer one that came out?
Ocean's 8?
No. Please, don't.
Why?
I know why.
Come on, man. Inclusive, if you don't have Clooney, if you don't have Pitt, it doesn't count.
Well, Clooney was like alluded to be somewhere in there.
Yeah, but we didn't see his face, so.
Man, you don't need to see it. That hairline? Millions of dollars.
Well, I mean, speaking of these heist movies, though, like, how do you see this as far as, like, what's your opinion on, like, the idea of this movie being about heists, or do you feel like it's actually not necessarily about the robberies and stuff and about something deeper?
I honestly think it becomes something deeper towards the end of the movie, right? Once they start getting burned, once that guy that they were supposed to kill off at the beginning of the movie starts really fucking with them, because obviously, you know what? I don't blame the guy.
Wayne Grohl, they
did fuck with him, right? They were going to kill him. Now, did he kind of deserve it? Yeah, because he killed like 3 innocent people. Those guys weren't going to do shit. They were like, their eardrums were already fucking popped. They were like concussed for sure. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he just decided to kill him. And that's like, so I guess to some extent.
I don't like how they got sloppy towards the end. Because in the beginning, it was really a heist movie. It was a lot. It was strategic. Yeah. They were planned. They had everything coordinated, you know, really well. And then once the cops were on their fucking tail, they're still like, hey, let's pull off the biggest heist of all time. But it's like, bro, come on. Like,
but again just that's like the criminal mindset, though. They become greedy. Like, it's not enough.
It wasn't De Niro that got greedy. It was the other two.
George, once you feel the heat, you got 30 seconds. What are you going to do?
I'm out, dude. I'm out. I'm in the Bahamas sipping Mai Tais, bro. Bye. Fuck all that.
But again, like, one of the reasons I feel like this bakes other heist movies, like The Town, the Ocean's movies, which we just talked about, that are just fun. Point Break, Baby Driver. I think that would be another.
It's a good recent one.
I think is what sets it apart is it continues a level of seriousness, right? I think in all these movies besides The Town, it kind of you have funny moments, you know.
You think the humor undercuts some of the more serious scenes.
Yeah, and I feel like this keeps the intensity the whole.
There's nothing funny about this movie, too.
Yeah, well,
nothing at all.
No, you want to say it, don't you?
No, nothing. No.
You gotta say.
She's gotta
say
what?
It for the people.
They'll wait.
We'll bleep it out.
We'll tease them.
But yeah, I like the level of seriousness that's like throughout the movie, and like, you just don't get that in like in movies that kind of go to this. I don't know, like, yeah. I haven't seen a movie recently.
I agree, because I feel like, unfortunately, right now there's like a little like culture in these types of, you know, I guess blockbuster films where you have to have some comedy like throughout, like sprinkled throughout, like you can't get just a fucking straight direct serious heist film, I guess, like this.
It's because of the mass appeal. They want other people to watch the movies, not just because it's, you know, an action-packed, you know, fucking full of
explosions.
You want
multiple genres, so that everyone comes out with something.
But I mean, I think this kind of genre is kind of making a comeback, like with all the John Wick movies. Those are straight action movies. There's literally no fucking dialogue.
But that's not a heist movie, though.
No, I know, but it appeals to a certain audience that just wants fucking putazos flying, vatos dying.
No,
you know?
I get that, but like, I feel like it's also, that's not something you can watch every day. I feel like if I see this movie like once every 6 months, I'm a hand.
Yeah, I don't think they're in the same category, but it does feel like, you know, they do have to add the comedy, like Alexis says, which sucks because this was done really well, and I enjoyed it despite that, you know.
And going back to the John Wick movies, I think the first one was innovative. The following two were just like, okay, we're just gonna give like fucking fan service, basically.
Yeah. I like the last one, though, the fourth one. That was pretty sick.
Parabellum?
Oh, that was just chapter 4.
Chapter 4, bro.
Parabellum was 3.
Yeah.
It's so weird how they do that. John Wick 2, John Wick Parabellum, John Wick chapter 4. Yeah. It's like there was never chapters before. It's just going to be John Wick Roman numeral 5.
Well, let's go to some fun facts here. You know, I think, and I want Nick to say, because he's been saying it so passionately. As soon as.
And once you put the pressure on, though, once you get the heat on.
I want the heat on you.
I don't think I could do great ass.
God damn, you fucking leveled.
Sorry
that.
To the headphone users on that one.
Yeah.
But apparently that was fully fully not planned.
And that was all Pacino?
That was all Al Pacino.
That's my guy Al right there, you know?
Well, you know what? He's having kids at 80, so you know what?
He's still shooting winners, bro.
He's still really into great asses. It tracks.
Who isn't? Well, I read that the actor, Hank Azaria, the one that he was yelling at, like, he didn't expect that him to do that dialogue. So when he's kind of like, what? That's like I think a genuine reaction,
and that's how you keep, and that's the type of shit that you keep in the fucking movie,
right? Because like, what do you say to that?
You don't.
You don't say anything.
It's just funny because you have other movies where you have like Django, where what happens is an actor's getting hurt and really bleeding, and everybody has to like stay calm or cool. And like, I feel like now those are the scenes where people talk about like, oh, that's how the actor improvised. Like someone got hurt, or like I forgot which one else I was looking at where this actor ran. It was another movie that the actor started actually physically hitting with a hammer up against the wall to the point where he started actually breaking the drywall that they had for the set. And by the end of the scene, the actor that was being pinned up against the wall actually was like passing out from like fear. Shit.
Damn.
And so it's like you have those types of scenes and you're like, wow, the passion that went into the delivery, that perseverance past injury. And then you have Al Pacino just yelling about asses.
Right,
and he says it so fucking
and
seriously.
And he still beat everybody.
And like, it's like a funny line if you just read it on paper, but like in the movie, it's like completely
it's delivery,
serious.
Man. It's all about delivery.
It's fucking serious.
That's I think Pacino and Cage, man. They're all about delivery.
Oh yeah,
they're for sure. That's why they're some of the greatest actors in the game right now, man. They're still doing it.
They're still doing it.
Nobody like them.
What?
Nobody like them.
Nobody. Oh, okay. I thought you said something completely different. Did you guys notice the one singular green screen appearance in this movie?
Yes, bitch, because you pointed it out.
You talking about that scene where it's De Niro and the girl in front of the skylight?
I don't think it was the only time, but it was the only way they used it, because they used it a couple times with skylines. I think, like I said, I wonder if it was something with like the technology back in the day where they just couldn't get the lights to pop.
So according to the director just didn't like the way he shot it the first time. He didn't like the dialogue, so they reshot it in front of a green screen. But originally it was shot the way that it looked, but just didn't like it, and then stick with the second, the green screen.
What I want to know is how the fuck they got permits to film at a full airport, like while planes are flying
by. It was the 90s, dude. Before 9/11, you can get away with shit, man.
Honestly,
Now you can't film.
Yeah, we're actually shooting at commercial airlines the whole time,
dude. That's insane. I mean, they did it. Tenet, they got a whole fucking plane and blew it up, but I mean, it wasn't at an airport.
Yeah, I'd really like you guys to see a film called Bullet. With Steve McQueen, because
it has one of the most iconic actual
also,
car
also car chase, but then the ending is at an airport, and it kind of mirrors it a little bit. I always wonder if Michael Mann kind of saw Bullet and was like, ooh, like
he might have.
I like that.
He might have, man.
I mean, you guys will.
All will.
Well, another thing, dude. Imagine seeing Mel Gibson playing Al Pacino's character Vince.
Nah,
I wouldn't.
Well, he was lined up. You know, Nick Nolte was also.
Nick Nolte?
Yeah.
You know what? He has an energy. Nolte has an energy.
Mel Gibson is good at directing.
You like Passion of the Christ?
Dude, Apocalypto? One of the best ever.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
I like Highlander. That was a good movie,
Blazing
too.
Saddles, same type of movie.
Waterworld? Was Waterworld him?
Saddles.
That's Mel Gibson direct, baby.
No, you mean Mel Brooks? Look it up.
Oh, same guy.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, Mel Gibson's just as racist as Blazing Saddles. That's why
he was
in my head.
You're right.
To be honest.
You're not wrong.
He is as crazy looking as Blazing Saddles.
That's true, too.
And Rust, he was shooting, but
Rust.
Not the camera.
Exactly.
Well, Alex, I think it's time for your letterbox to be. See what we got here.
All right, let's see what we got. Just some randomly plucked reviews. Hopefully they're all 5 stars. They should be. All right, this one. This one's a long one. This is by Mr. Sean Gilman. A review from 2017. This person gives it a 5-star. Oh, God. I'm going to have to paraphrase this. That moment when De Niro realizes he has to go after Wangro. He's not a romantic hero. He's a small-minded man of violence driven not by ideals or esoteric codes, by the basis of human urges. Those are words.
They are.
That's high vocabulary. Fuck, this is too much. Other man films are more romantic. The heroes of Mohicans and Black Cat see everything around them destroyed and disappear into the wilderness. But together, what the fuck? This is too much.
This guy likes this movie a lot.
They got 8,500 likes on this review.
It's a good review. If you guys want,
Mr. Sean Gilman.
It's Sean Gilman.
Sean Gilman. All right, 5-star.
Five star.
I said nothing, but he said everything.
Yes.
All right. Next one by Patrick Willems. This is a review from 2019. God damn, Isaac. You want reviews of the little people, not the big people. These guys are getting over 8,000 likes on the reviews. They don't need the exposure.
But we do, anyways. And we're going to follow them on Letterboxd.
All right, Patrick Willems, 5 stars. It's cool when a bunch of geniuses at the height of their powers all converge on one single perfect project.
You know, I agree with that because, again, these guys were, like, in their prime, in their mid-40s to early 50s.
Right.
They got their acting down. They could do the cardio that was required to do it because they were running. This fucking movie, they ran. Okay.
You know what? I think I will say, I feel like this is Pacino at his, like, ripest. You know what I mean? Like, I know Scarface... big one. Devil's Godfather, Advocate, another Devil's good Advocate. One. Godfather, but I think this is the one that everyone talks about.
I just like seeing that they could share the screen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we had this whole theory of like...
Not an Irishman.
Of whether they were... Yeah. We had this whole theory of whether or not they actually shot their scenes together because a lot of their scenes were like back of head to front of head.
Yeah.
So like technically they could have body doubles. But at the end of the day, whether that happened or not, neither of them were stealing each other's limelight throughout the movie. They played off each other really well. We talked about their almost romance, like where they were made for each other.
They were
more
playing
than
ping
their
pong.
Own girls, you know.
Yeah. I thought they were both going to leave their women at the end and just start making out in the field. You know?
That's but a different movie that you watched at home.
This is that ties in.
Sorry,
this next
wrong
review.
Movie. Wrong movie.
In Heat. Yeah.
So this one's by Fabiola Osorio.
That was Bob De Niro.
This review, they gave it a 0.5 star. And they say, is this what straight men like to watch?
No, George loved this movie.
And I think,
and Nick is biased, so he's only half a man.
I liked it kind of.
And then this last one by Mr. Deepak Chazhoor.
Is this George?
More like Chazhoor, 0.5 star. Just because a film brings together two of the greatest actors of all time doesn't necessarily make it great. Content is always the king. He is stale and boring, and this guy can go jump off of a fucking
this
bridge.
This guy fucking sucks. I want to see what his letterbox looks like. Yeah, what movies is this guy watching?
Well,
like,
I mean, it wasn't Infinity War, so clearly it wasn't good enough. You know?
If it doesn't have a Marvel title intro, then it's
not
good.
Stale and boring? If I watched this in the 90s when it came out, this would have been the greatest fucking thing of all time.
Yeah.
Now that it's a little bit later, it's a little dated, but it's still fantastic.
I don't think it's dated, dude. I think
I said a little bit.
I think
not even
bit.
Bad.
It has a little bit of like stupidities and stuff, but what movie doesn't, you know?
Right.
I mean, and I feel like the greatness aspects of this movie are so far beyond any small little like oversight. You know, like I personally have my frustrations with the relationships because I feel like it's overdone now to show like how cops can't hold a relationship. But I feel like
overdone now.
That was what I was gonna say. Is it's hard to say that as a listener in 2025 or watcher in 2025 when it's been done for an additional 30 years. It's like, yeah, of course you're going to feel like, oh, this whole trope of a detective is married to his job is old. Well, for all we know, this was still very fresh.
Mm-hmm.
This is what started the fucking trope.
And also, honestly,
no, it didn't.
Honestly, like speaking of relationships too, like the fact of the matter
stand
is
on
that,
the shoulders of giants, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
you
true.
Fact of the matter, sorry.
Is that the worst people in this film, whether you're talking De Niro or you're talking any one of the criminals, for the most part, they all treated their women really kindly. Like, the only real problem was Val Kilmer, and it kind of did show how everybody disagreed with how he was treating his partner in his relationship, right? And I think that's, in and of itself, is progressive. Like, even when they fought, even when Pacino fought with his wife, like, it was very much about how he felt like they had already communicated, they had already talked about what their relationship needed to be, and they just and she's asking for more than he can give. But it was never violent against each other. It never held like any, like it didn't seem like she was ever afraid of him, you know? And I feel like that's such a trope for the 90s to have like women, men mm-hmm. or women abusers and stuff like that in men, that it was nice to not see that here.
Yeah.
It was also interesting to see what the three different levels that they had in their relationship. Cause Kilmer, obviously he's getting cheated on. He thinks he's doing everything right for this woman, but obviously he's not. Then it's Al Pacino. He's actually full-on catches his wife cheating, almost doesn't give a fuck,
fucking
and just storms off. And then there's Pacino, where he's just kind of like tormenting this poor girl. She's like, are you ever going to let me leave? And then kind of gives her the option, but not really. And then eventually he just fucking leaves her.
You mean De Niro?
Oh, sorry, De Niro. De Niro. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very interesting that they're all like
different
stages
levels,
yeah.
But all
but they're all fucking up
all
equally. Yeah.
And like the only real relationship in this whole fucking movie that worked would have been was
Danny Trejo's.
Well, Danny Trejo, it didn't work. They died.
True.
Well, they died together. But,
yeah, yeah, that's true.
They ride together. They die together. But, bad Mexicans for life. But anyway, no, I was gonna say the actual real one. It was between Pacino and De Niro.
Yeah, which was really beautiful.
It
I
was.
Think. I think. I mean, spoiler alert. But at the end, when you know De Niro's dying.
And what? Fuck!
I'm just kidding. Watch this.
Like when your De Niro's dying and Pacino holds his hand, like there's a level of tenderness where it's like I acknowledge you as a person and I respect you. And I'm
I think
sad
they should
that
have
just
left their wives. And
I think they
gone
just
after
I think
other.
They just acknowledge each other because again they were in that cat and mouse game the whole
But they're
they
the same guy.
Perfect adversaries.
Yeah. It's the same coin, just different sides.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that was like important to see that kind of respect and not be like these other movies where they always just undermine each other. You have a villain who thinks that the hero is too stupid to catch him, so he monologues everything that he's gonna fucking do, or a villain that genuinely is just so dumb it just takes forever to give the reveal of who he is. Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know?
Also one thing that I noticed, I don't know if you guys agree with it, but when he found his stepdaughter dead, right, he was already
dying.
He was convinced that he had already lost. He put his ego aside and was like, hey, I was defeated, and was like, fuck it, I'm gonna go, you know, help the stepdaughter out.
No, he was just going to check into a hotel room.
Well, that's why he was kind of defeated. But what ultimately brought De Niro down was his fucking ego. He could have just let everything go. He would have won, but then he went back to fucking kill whatever his name was.
But you also gotta think about it. Al Pacino's character also left his dying daughter at the hospital once she, like, he got
stepdaughter,
right?
But he also went. He chose them first because he had already chosen defeat.
You know what this movie is saying? Everybody's human.
It is
true. Wow.
But also, don't go to your primal urges and you know.
But
your
I do
ego.
Like where George is going with that, though. I think that idea that you watch the guy who had the code, the guy who had the means to stick to the code, the whole movie, finally let his fucking ego get in the way, and broke his code, got it killed. And then the guy who was consistently being torn between his family and his job, when he finally did the right thing for a second and just let go, took a breather, he was able to not only save his stepdaughter, but also kind of recollect himself into a position where he was actually able to like find him again. For all intents and purposes, Pacino thought he was gone. He thought he was in the wind. He thought he was nowhere else.
Because, you know, if you look at De Niro's character, he was kind of doing all the right things. You know, he got rid of most of his tracks. He looked like he had a plan out. You know, he was doing it, you know?
Dude, that scene where they talked about how while they went to go get coffee, he had his guys at 9 p.m. sharp all ditch their surveillance devices. And then on top of that, when he left the coffee shop, he purposely drove towards LAX so that he couldn't have the flyers above chase him because of fly spaces and stuff like that. That was brilliant.
The man was a genius.
He was a genius. Like, that's the thing that I miss of, like, certain movies, like ocean movies, when we talked about those, is I liked the way that they explained how they got away with stuff. So that wasn't what they did here when it came to like how they got access to the bank information. They didn't really go into crazy details, and I didn't care for that. But watching them explain how they meticulously evaded one another or caught each other, that was fun.
And like you see how their experiences played out, because they're like, you know, from the beginning of the movie, they were all really experienced. Like Al Pacino was an experienced cop, and you see fucking Robert De Niro's character, an experienced like thug. Like he knew exactly how he needs to run. They had everything timed out. They were placing their shots correctly in the action scenes. They were driving with
professionals, Isaac. Professionals.
You're correct. Now let's go into the review segment. You know, George, I know this is your first time watching this movie. What'd you think?
I really liked it. I think that it was a tad bit too long, because there are certain things where I'm like,
TikTok brain.
They could have ended it. Like, he didn't have to go back and kill all that second guy. What was his name? Manziel. Oh, he didn't have to go back for Manziel. He didn't have to go back for Wangro. He could have just let it all go and been off with his girl, and he would have been fine.
I think he needed to kill Van Zandt because he knew probably where Robert De Niro's money was going to be.
Potentially, but also
just a loose end.
It is loose ends.
I think it was just more ego. Like, again, I think when he said that he would in 30 seconds be able to leave,
exactly,
he never actually meant like a loose end, or more importantly, like, he never thought about it as far as his ego. He thought about it like, I can leave any woman behind. I can leave any friend behind. But if you cross me, you're going to pay no matter the price. And he paid the ultimate price to make sure that those guys got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that, like, certain scenes, like the shootout, the epic scene right there, like, fantastic. It's kind of unrealistic that they just got away in a vehicle and then we don't even know where they go, anything like that. It's like, come on, you're telling me there's not a few patrol vehicles still trying to chase them down?
95.
Yeah, but it seemed like a little bit of it was too, you know, far off. But the beginning, I really enjoyed. Everything else flowed really well. I liked that they had a system. They stuck to it. But then in the end, it kind of started falling apart, which I was like, it's a little unrealistic. I feel like a man, like, of his stature and his rhetoric wouldn't have done those things. But other than that, I really enjoyed it. I give it a 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
Very good.
All right. Alexis, what do you give this movie?
Me? I give this an almost perfect score. I'll give it a 9.
You give it a 9?
I'll give it a 9 out of 10. I've seen this movie maybe 5 times. The last time I saw it was actually at Tarantino's Theater, the New Beverly. And let me tell you, the sound in there and that movie theater, perfection. I think my ears were fucking ringing from that scene, that gunfight scene. No. But
I'm surprised your ears could ring with all that blood rushing towards your penis.
Good point, Nick. Good point, Nick. But yeah, I mean, I give it a what did I say?
I give it a 9.
9.
9 whole inches. Anyway, I also give it a 9. Not 9 inches, though, unfortunately. But, yeah.
If 3 is enough, baby.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, before I start crying. This fucking movie was phenomenal. I remember I actually recently watched it for the first time. And rewatching it even today, like, I was still enjoying myself. I still found myself thinking that obviously certain things and certain scenes I could have changed. Of course, George, I get it. You know, no movie's really perfect, but
yeah.
I think that as far as 3-hour movies go, holy shit.
No, this
blew me
bad.
Away. Kept me captivated. Like, didn't feel like
it was this or Gladiator. I'm choosing this.
Yeah, yeah. I completely
hands
agree.
Hands down. Hands
completely
down.
Completely agree. And I think Gladiator's still a phenomenal movie in and of
Even
itself.
Even Gladiator
says,
too.
Or this or an Oppenheimer.
Yes. I watched Gladiator recently and I'm like, you're absolutely right, Gator. Gladiator 2 was better for me, to be honest. I don't know if it's
I still wow. haven't seen the second one.
I have not either.
Yeah, I liked it.
But Denzel yeah, Washington. 9 out of 10, man.
I got to disagree on that. Gladiator 2 and Gladiator 1. I think Gladiator
that's another good. Pod.
That's another podcast for another day. I give it a 9 too.
Wow. Yeah.
I give it a 9. It's a fantastic movie. It has a great cast. You know, I'm going to seem a little bit repetitive here, but like, it has a lot of the things that I want in a movie. And again, even though it was a 3-hour movie, I didn't think it was a 3-hour fucking movie. If you, like, when we stopped, because George had to go to the restroom at like minute 35, like, I'm like, oh shit, I feel like it's only been like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It feels enjoyable. It feels fresh. It feels good every time. And I don't know. I highly recommend this movie to anybody that has the time, because again, it's a 3-hour long movie.
Yeah.
You got to be able to sit through it. And
we actually had to wait a week because we started it and then we were like, fuck, we're not gonna have time. So
yeah, it's hard to do this and record right
yeah.
after.
Yeah,
so
no. But you're right, Isaac, something about this movie, it's just fresh every
just
time.
Fresh, man.
Certified yeah. fresh.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. I think that thing that calls
well
it
overall what do we give it? It's a 8.6, you think?
8.75.
Let's round it up to 9.
Yeah.
Just give it a 9.
Solid 9.
Solid 9 from 4 guys,
one
film.